There are, of course, many reasons why people don't follow Jesus Christ. But in this massively hedonistic and materialistic secular society, without question, one of the big turnoffs is the perception that Jesus is a restricting person, one who limits, confines, one who will cramp your style, that he will ruin life, that Christianity is all about knots, not being able to do this, that, and the other, and not being able to be allowed to do all the things that are the most fulfilling parts of life. I can recall a number of conversations recently where that has been the perception of what it means to follow Jesus. But fascinatingly, talk to people, scratch the surface of their lives, and underneath, you don't find satisfied, fulfilled, contented people who are at ease with themselves. So it's not that they're rejecting Jesus because they are deeply satisfied. Oh, they're not deeply unhappy either, but push a little and they admit that they do wonder what life is all about. Maybe that's why you've come here this lunchtime. We're thrilled you have, if that's you. People are looking for something more in life, aiming for something which they will believe will in some measure give them a sense of fulfillment. But for one reason or another, they've already decided that Jesus is not the answer. In their minds, Jesus and satisfaction are two words that simply do not go together. And so they reject him. Now, we saw the same last week. As Jesus went to his hometown at the end of chapter 13 of Matthew's Gospel, the people of his hometown were amazed by his teaching. We saw that in chapter 13, verse 54. You see, they couldn't deny it. His teaching was out of this world. The very same verse tells us that they had no explanation for his wisdom and his miraculous powers. Chapter 13, verse 54. But rather than conclude that standing before them was none other than God himself, rather than conclude that Jesus was literally out of this world, they had already decided that he couldn't possibly be any more than a man. And we see then in verses 55 to 57 of chapter 13, they reasoned that he was just an ordinary bloke, and devastatingly, verse 57, they took offense at him. They rejected him. So last week we saw people rejecting Jesus. This week in chapter 14, verses 13 to 21, in some measure we see people accepting him. You see, in verses 13 and 14, we meet a huge crowd looking for Jesus. And as we look at this passage, we're going to see that the feeding of the crowd was a miracle. At the first point, it's a simple point. This is a miracle. You see, verse 14, Jesus had compassion on this crowd and he healed their sick. And it seems it went on for longer than anyone expected. And so, verse 15, as evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy some food, buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They don't need to go away. You give them something to eat." Now, when I read these verses earlier, and maybe as Fran was reading them, you thought this as well. When I read them earlier this week, I was squarely on the side of the disciples. They seem so sensible. And Jesus' words in verse 16 seem so unreasonable. Don't you look at verses 15 and 16 and think that? The disciples were right, weren't they? Verse 15, "We're in a remote place, it's getting late, send the people away so that they can go and have their tea." That's sensible, isn't it? Well, if they'd been talking to anybody else, yes. But they're talking to Jesus. And what has Jesus just been doing? He's been healing the sick out of compassion for them, verse 14. Although Jesus had longed to be on his own, verse 13, he couldn't ignore the plight of the crowd. And so if the disciples had just been thinking straight, verse 15 would have said something like this. Of course, it's always dangerous to rewrite the Bible, but if they'd been thinking straight, this is what it would have read. Verse 15, "As evening approached, the disciples came to Jesus and said, 'This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Surely you'll feed the people now, won't you, Jesus?'" See, by this point in the gospel, Jesus had already performed many miracles. In chapters 8 and 9 alone, you can see that the disciples had seen Jesus heal a leper and a centurion's slave. Their own lives had been saved when he calmed a storm. They'd witnessed the deliverance of a demon-possessed man. In their presence, Jesus made a paralytic walk, and then he got a dead girl to walk. That really is impressive. And he made the blind see and the mute talk. The disciples had seen it all. And now in verse 14, they'd seen that Jesus could not ignore the physical needs of people, even when he wanted to be alone, because he had compassion for them. And so they should have deduced that Jesus knows the needs of this crowd, that he can meet the needs of this crowd, and that he will meet the needs of this crowd. You see, when you're in the presence of Jesus, verse 15 is not so sensible at all. And verse 16 is not so harsh at all. See, why did Jesus tell the disciples to feed the crowd in verse 16? It's this, because we've seen in verse 15, they hadn't yet grasped who Jesus really is and what he's really like. Verse 16 is meant to, and was meant to, provoke a response, and it did. Look at verse 17. "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Jesus, we can't feed the crowd. We can't do that. We only 5 loaves and 2 fish. We can't even feed ourselves properly. We don't have an arrangement with any of the Pret-a-Manger stores around here. We can't feed the crowd, Jesus." That's exactly what Jesus wanted them to realize. It needed to be spelt out that clearly for the disciples and for us, the readers. And it needs to be spelt out because otherwise people will look for all manner of ways to explain away this miracle that Jesus is about to perform. You see, that's what we saw last week, do you remember? The people in his own town explained away his teaching and his miracles. They couldn't deny that he'd done miracles, but they explained it away. We saw at the beginning of chapter 14, verses 1 and 2, how Herod came to the most bizarre conclusions about Jesus' miracles. So we saw it last week. I've come across it this week in my reading. Liberal theologians explain away this miracle of the feeding of the crowd in the most astonishing ways, because they've already decided that miracles can't possibly happen in the world. I'm not even going to waste your time telling you how they explain away this miracle. I'm certainly not going to waste our time this lunchtime engaging with them. Now, do you see the point? Jesus said verse 16 to provoke verse 17 so that we all know the score. No one can feed this crowd. Not when they've only got 5 loaves and 2 fish. And once we've got that clear in our minds, when Jesus does feed them, there is no doubt. This is a miracle, and he is more than a man. So this is supposed to trigger the question that we saw in chapter 13, verse 54. Where did this man get these miraculous powers? And of course, we don't have to guess to answer that question. Who can do this? Who can miraculously feed thousands when there's no food about? And that leads us to our second point. This is a miracle of creation. Indeed, it is supposed to remind us of the feeding of the thousands of Israelites in the wilderness. You see, here is a huge crowd in the wilderness. Well, in a remote place, as we read in verse 15. It's supposed to remind us of the huge crowd that had followed the Lord out of Egypt into the desert, the wilderness. And what did he do for them there? Well, you don't need to turn it up, but it's Exodus chapter 16. He gave them manna in the morning. He gave them quail in the evening. He fed them. He gave them out of nothing. And the point of it all, let me read Exodus 16, verse 11 and 12 for you. "The Lord said to Moses, 'I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight they will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God.'" Then you will know that I am the Lord your God. In the Exodus, he provided food for them to prove that he is God, that God is God. So here is Jesus feeding this crowd that had followed him into the wilderness, into this remote place, and he did it to prove that he is God. Because this is a miracle of creation. Only God can do that, creating out of nothing. But this is not just a miracle of creation. And as we, you see, at this point in my Bible study this week, I thought, I'm not going to tell this congregation anything they don't know. They know all that. And this is where it got really exciting for me. You see, this is not just a miracle of creation. As we look more carefully, thirdly, we see this is a miracle of new creation, of the new heavens and the new earth. This miracle points to the heavenly banquet that will be for all who trust in the Lord. Look at verse 19. Doesn't seem very spectacular. Jesus directed the people to sit down on the grass. Nothing unusual. until you know that the word sit down is literally recline. Jesus said, I want you to recline on the grass. Now that is an unusual expression. You just don't say that. No wonder the translators have written it here, sit down. But I wish they hadn't. Because the word recline is vital. Recline as you would at a banquet is what Jesus is saying. And so in verse 19, Jesus is saying, get ready for a feast. I'm not going to give you a snack. This is not going to be a burger and fries to keep you going until you get home. You're about to have a banquet. And verse 19, he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and he looked up to heaven. He broke the loaves. The disciples distributed them. And verse 20, they all ate and were satisfied. Again, more literally, completely satisfied. You know what feeling they had? They had that after Christmas dinner feeling. You know, really bloated. They felt fit to bust, or as a friend of mine from up north used to say, BTA, back teeth awash. It's not very nice, is it? Well, that's what they felt. This was no packed lunch. When did anybody ever feel completely satisfied after a couple of sandwiches, a bag of crisps, a banana and a carton of apple juice? Well, never. The whole crowd, and it was a huge crowd, every one of them, completely satisfied. They'd had a banquet, and the leftovers proved it. Verse 20, 12 basketfuls left over. They couldn't eat it all. They didn't want any more. We've had more than enough. Oh, of course, I'm not asking you to believe that Jesus fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fish. I'm not asking that at all. Don't believe that. No, look at verse 21. Jesus fed far more than 5,000 people. The men only numbered 5,000, excluding the women and children. This was more like the feeding of the 15 or 20,000. Jesus fed the crowd at a football match with 5 loaves and 2 fish, and at the end of it, every one of them felt as if they'd been to a banquet. The point, Jesus is God, yes, but much more. Jesus is the God of the Old Testament who promised a heavenly banquet for those who follow him. Oh, there's various places we could go, but let me ask you to keep your finger in Matthew 14, and just so you can see this, will you flip back with me to Isaiah 25, just so that you can see it for yourself, this prophecy? It's page 708, so that we see this banquet, the new creation banquet that is waiting for all who are real believers. Page 708, Isaiah 25. We're going to go straight back to Matthew 14 in a moment, but just look at verses 6 to 9, Isaiah 25, verse 6. On this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. On this mountain, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all people, the sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove the disgrace of all people from all the earth. The Lord has spoken. Now, do you see, the feeding of the 20,000, which is what I'm going to call it from now on, because it's not actually the feeding of the 5,000 at all, the feeding of the 20,000 was an anticipation of this messianic banquet in the new creation. This miracle points to a day when all who are his will be fully satisfied, not only with full bellies, but fully satisfied with contented and fulfilled lives. Because it points, Isaiah chapter 25, verse 8, it points to a day where death has been swallowed up. And remember, that was the backdrop to Jesus going into this remote place, to the death of John the Baptist. This miracle points to a place again, Isaiah 25 verse 8, where the Lord will wipe away every tear. And remember again, the people had come to Jesus to be healed from their sicknesses, wiping away every tear. In this miracle, Jesus shows that he is the one who will bring total satisfaction in the new creation, where life will be perfect, and where we will be where we were meant to be, where we will be where we were created to be. What a stunning miracle. Well, flip back again then to Matthew 14 with me. It's a miracle that points to the future then, but it also speaks of the present. You see, fourthly, this is a miracle of provision. See, with Matthew 14 in our minds now, I started at this point in my Bible study before in preparing to preach this week, to think, what else has Matthew told us already? What have we read in Matthew's gospel about feeding and hunger and thirsting? And I recall Matthew chapter 6, verse 33, where Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, "Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." What's the context of that? Jesus was telling people not to worry about the details of their life, what they should eat or drink, or what they should wear. And so here in chapter 14, we discover people who had nothing to eat, but they were people who had been seeking Jesus. Now, I'm sure their motives were not entirely pure, but to some measure they were seeking Jesus. And of course, they are in stark contrast to the people of chapter 13 who had rejected Jesus. And so we see as they were seeking Jesus, seeking first his kingdom and his righteousness, he met their needs. Matthew chapter 6, "Do not worry about your life, what you'll eat or drink. Seek first his kingdom and all these things will be given to you." Jesus feeds them. Now, what an important message that is for us. Because we do all so easily worry about all the things of life. And not least of all in our workplaces. See, we have to ask, at work, is our biggest concern to be seeking after God's kingdom and God's righteousness? Well, I guess we know the answer to that as we come to those great moments of decision at work. When we have to choose between doing the right thing as a Christian or compromising our faith, when we have to either stand up for Christ and be counted or just remain silent. You know, as I talk to people in the workplace, very often, the reason it's so difficult for them to do the right thing, to stand up and be counted, is because of the fear that if they do stand up for Christ, they might lose their job and then they won't be able to provide for their family and they won't be able to put food on the table. But you see, as I look at the miraculous feeding of the 20,000, I can have confidence that Jesus will provide as he promised. As I seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, he will provide. I will not go hungry. And knowing that and believing that enables me to do the right thing rather than to compromise. It enables me to seek first his kingdom without compromise. So yes, this is a miracle that points to the future. The future of the new creation has powerful implications in the present. But I wonder how many of us really believe that Jesus provides for us as we put his things first. This has been a real challenge for me. I wonder if the reason we don't really believe it or trust it or live in the light of it is one of the reasons that unbelievers think that following Jesus is so restricting. Because they don't see us, a freedom in us, a satisfaction in Jesus that makes us live positively distinctive lives. So of course they don't think that following Jesus is going to satisfy them. Well, this is a miracle of provision, but it's also a miracle, fifthly, of satisfaction. See, again, do you recall the words of Jesus right at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount? Matthew chapter 5, the same gospel. Matthew chapter 5, verse 6. Listen to these words. Jesus said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they will be filled." Or, more literally, completely satisfied. The same word as in chapter 14, verse 20. Those who hunger will be completely satisfied. That's what we see in this astonishing miracle. So the physical experience of this miracle demonstrates what will be ours spiritually as we hunger and thirst after Jesus. As I said at the beginning, people long to be completely satisfied. But where do they turn for that satisfaction? Even as Christians, we turn to other things to satisfy us. We hunger for the things that this world has to offer. We chase after promotion, thinking that it will fill us. We grab for the latest gadgets, flashier cars, better holidays, bigger houses, all the time thinking those things will fill us and fulfill us. But those things are like burger and fries from McDonald's. They're quite nice while you're eating them, but as fast as you finish, you start to feel hungry again. Jesus satisfies with a banquet. But again, I guess most of us have never experienced that, even Christians, because we don't hunger and thirst for him. Again, no wonder unbelievers have no concept of Jesus being a satisfying person to follow, because even we, his followers, are not looking for our satisfaction in him. And so that leaves us impoverished. And it leaves us a bit like Herod. You see, it's interesting that immediately before this banquet, Matthew told us about another banquet. I'm very grateful to Katie Walton for pointing this out to me earlier this week. See, the earlier banquet in Matthew 14 is Herod's birthday party. Do you see it there in verse 6? So these opening two stories of chapter 14 of Matthew are the tale of two banquets. Which one would you prefer to be at? Herod and his mates were tanked up with alcohol, turned on by the seductive dance of his stepdaughter. We saw it last week. His life was so immoral that his stepdaughter was also his niece. Oh, what a great guy Herod was. Sex mad, throwing outrageous parties. Great fun to be around Herod. What was it? Remember what it led to? Verse 9, Herod was distressed. And that distress went on long after the party had ended. Verse 2, he believed that Jesus was John the Baptist come back to haunt him. Herod was a haunted man, a distressed man. And so by putting these two stories together, do you see what Matthew is saying here? Compare verse 9 with verse 20. Herod was distressed. That's what you get when you reject Jesus. That's what you get when you chase after the things of this world, when you look for the things of this world to fulfill you. Herod was beside himself. But at Jesus' banquet, verse 20, everyone was satisfied, completely satisfied. That's what Jesus offers. And this miracle says it's what he can deliver, both now and for eternity. Now that, to use the phrase of this talk, that's food for thought.